We'll meet someone today who had a great idea on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. A high school student decided to form a writing club. We'll ask her about that. Then ask Garrison Keillor for the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. When Roald Tweet heard that you had organized a writing club at Friendship Manor, he went into an ecstatic fit. Roald thinks everyone ought to write.
Well, I mean, what Katie's doing is destroying our image of teenagers as shiftless and lazy.
Well, Catherine Moore is the young lady in question, a senior at Rock Island High School. And whatever possessed you to do this, Katie?
Well, I wanted to do a service project this summer, and I've always been very passionate about writing, but working with older people appealed much more to me because a five-year-old doesn't have a lot of life experience, so...
Yeah, that's a profound insight right there. So how did you go about this?
Well, I contacted Nancy Mann, the activities director at Friendship Manor, and she really helped me get the word out and see if people would be interested in doing this. And she told me that they've tried to do writing programs before, but haven't had a lot of success. So she was very excited to see this take off, and I was too.
Well, how did you get it to take off? What was your approach? How'd you get it done?
I spoke at a residence meeting to see if the idea would appeal to anyone, and then we just started having meetings, posting up flyers, and people came. I wasn't really teaching them how to write so much as giving them prompts and the hardest thing wasn't finding interesting stories. It was convincing these people that their stories were interesting.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of response have you had?
We met over the summer, 8 meetings, and I'm now working to produce a booklet of these people's stories. They have made memoirs. They've put together little bits of poetry, short stories of their lives. And it's really been an incredible experience.
Boy. So do you let them write whatever they want, or do you say, well, this week let's work on poetry? Did you have them all try to write a poem?
Right, yeah. I mean, it was really, if they felt that they had something that they'd like to work on more, that was... Fine, I wasn't going to tell them no, obviously, but each week we would try to produce at least one piece of writing from each person, and we would have prompts. So one week we'd work on memoirs, and then short stories, poetry.
What's a prompt?
Let me
prompt you.
I would put together a little worksheet, sometimes with examples, and then we would just talk about using descriptive language or whatever was the topic of that week. And then next week they would come back and have these beautiful pieces that they would have no confidence in and tell me that they couldn't write, and it was crazy.
You mean the pieces were really good, but why is it everybody is convinced they can't write? Like I'm convinced I can't write. Why is that, Tweet? You're the sage.
I can't write poetry either. Because writing, you know, when you've written something, you're responsible for it.
Yeah.
When you say something, you know, it sort of disappears into thin air. But writing isn't really natural, I don't think. Speaking is natural.
Yeah.
You know, I blame to some extent. I was an English teacher, so I blame teachers. You know, when kids are learning to talk, every time they say something, let's call up grandma. Oh, he can say daddy. He can say mama, right? She can say this. She can say that. The minute you get to school and you write something, you didn't make your A big enough. You misspelled that word. You didn't do this right, right? And so I think Katie's going about it the right way, not teaching them how to write, but sort of getting out of the way so they write.
But it's, you know, reading maketh the full man, conference a ready man, and writing an exact man. And that's that exactness that I think is daunting. When you put something down, you write it on a piece of paper, then it's real and can be critiqued. Nobody critiques you when you're speaking because you can always back up and change your mind. Mm. But you put it on a piece of paper, and there it is.
Yeah, I still have trouble putting it on a piece of paper. I'm sort of embarrassed unless I'm sure it's right.
Yeah, but I'm never sure.
I'm surprised that you got them to actually write poetry. Did
Some
all
of
them do
no,
that?
No, not all of them. Sometimes I would, especially the poetry was a little bit scary to look at. And one lady told me flat out, oh, I don't write poetry. Well, I was like, well, that's all right. You don't have to. I'm not going to force your hand.
Yeah, it was Emerson that said that people fancy they hate poetry, and yet they're all poets and mystics.
Yeah.
You think everybody could write poems if they wanted to?
Oh, definitely. To? Especially nowadays, the concept of poetry is so completely fluid that really anything can pass for it.
Well, it is, right. If you call it a poem, it's a poem.
Right. So, yes.
Right. It doesn't have to rhyme. It doesn't.
You read all the submissions you get?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever critique them or do you say anything about them?
Actually, each week we would have everyone read what they had written from the past week in class out loud and then give feedback on it. So they were able to share what they had done with the group, and I think that was also really important to them because even if you are writing, there's usually not a way to really get it out there to get feedback. And
right.
This just the group setting in itself, I think, was very helpful.
Well, was any of the writing ever edited or corrected?
Mm-hmm. We would make small edits, but they didn't need a lot of help. I mean, these people have been...
When you say we would make small edits, did you make them or did they make them as a group?
Everyone would offer comments and suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess those were take it or leave it, but...
And now you have enough to put a booklet out.
Mm-hmm.
About how many pieces do you have?
I think we're going to have about 14.
Uh-huh.
Not quite sure.
And some of these are memoirs, some are stories.
Mm-hmm.
What did you have the greatest success with of all the different types of writing you ask for?
Definitely memoirs. People, mm-hmm. I think people definitely know what they've experienced best. So writing about things that had actually happened to them, whether it was in their travels or childhood, that really came through the strongest, I think.
Mm-hmm. How about short stories?
Well, those two are pretty similar, but... I think the memoir, definitely, where it's just a more descriptive and not a lot of plot, was much easier for just the recording of memories.
Do you write?
Oh, yes.
I sort of
guess. Have you always written?
Yeah.
How long have you been writing?
Ever since I can remember.
Oh, she has the dreaded disease. She is a writer. There is no escape for you, Katie.
It's all right.
You will spend your life writing. Do you keep a journal?
Yes. Actually, this summer is the first summer that I've managed to keep one every day. So.
And what do you write in your own journal?
Things that have happened. How I think about what's happened.
What's going to happen to this writing program now that school's back in session? Will it continue? Or is it just
it
a
will.
Summer?
It but will? Without me, because I'm going to be so busy with marching band and student bastards at Rocky. So this was actually, Ellie Cook is one of my members at the writing club. This was her idea that each of them would take it in turn to lead the club now that I'm gone. That person would draw up a prompt and then present it to the group, and then they would all work on that throughout the week and then come together again. Someone else would take over. Which I think is incredible.
And are you going to kind of check in on them from time to time to make sure?
I think
that's a great idea. I mean,
you are going to come back and check from time to time.
I don't think they need me too much.
Uh-huh. Well, I think, I think it's all useful for you to look in on them. Are you still working at this, children? Okay. Well, that's, and that was just... out of the blue as something to do in public service, huh?
Right. I knew I wanted to do a service project this summer, and then...
Is that a built-in component of a Rocky education?
No, it's not.
You're just doing that on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how does the idea occur to you? I mean, you talk about a service. Who suggests that these things should be done, or does that come out of the blue?
Well, a lot of scholarships these days require service projects, so... once this is all completed, I'll definitely try for some of those.
Uh-huh. how many service projects you have to have?
I don't think it's really a quantity thing.
Uh-huh.
This is just the one that I'm focusing on right now.
Okay, so you have your eyes on college, huh?
Oh, yeah.
What are you looking for? Have you already decided on a major in college?
I have not, but I want to minor in creative writing, so that's the mess that my life is right now.
Why not major in it?
Starving artist type of thing.
You don't want to starve, right?
You don't want to starve.
Well, here's an interesting statistic. I can't quote the numbers, but I know that if you look at all the different disciplines in college, the ones that have the greatest success in finding employment are classics scholars. Who would believe it?
The greatest percentage of acceptance to med school is classics, yeah.
Yeah. Classic scholars seem to find work out in the world more easily than anybody else. And I don't know why that is. Unless it's the fact that they fool with language and concepts and so on and are adaptable to almost anything.
Well, I think mainly you learn to think, right?
Oh, yeah. That's the key, learning to think.
And that's what writing does.
Yeah, well, writing making an exact man or woman, so... So that's good that you've started that, but surely you're going to maybe next summer look in on them just to see how they're doing?
Hopefully before that. Uh-huh. I've made friends there.
Is there a writing club at Rocky?
They have The Quarry, which is their literary magazine, and I was part of that my sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as a creative writing club, no, I don't believe they have that.
Do they teach creative writing classes?
Yes. It's a half-semester course that I'll be taking this year.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And what kind of writing are you interested in? You're still young, yet you could write a memoir, but are you going for fiction or reportage or what?
I mean, everyone wants to write a novel, but we'll see how that goes.
Is that in the back of your mind?
Yes, very much so. Hopefully writing. Not just one.
Well, that is a sizable goal.
Yes, it is.
Now, are you not at all interested in the short story form?
I am, and I'm sure. I mean, I know that those are much easier to get published.
There was a fellow named John Powers. I remember years ago. He was a celebrated short story writer, and so he put together a novel. And he did it in an ingenious way because he was an established short story writer. He would get a grant to write a short story, then publish it and reserve the rights, and do another one, and another one, and another one, put them all together, he had a novel, and was able to sell that. So there are ways around this, Katie. Well, we wish you luck, and I know that the people at Friendship Manor are grateful for your little project there. Because writing will enhance lives, it always does, and you're off to a good start.
Thank you.
So, Catherine Moore is the one who started the writing club at Friendship Manor, and we thank you, Katie, for being with us today. And now we're going to get to a guy who started the Writer's Almanac, Garrison Keillor. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Talking to Katie, you know, she's not careful, she'll turn into roll tweet.
Well, let's hope not.
Encouraging everybody to write. What happens if everybody writes? I mean, really, what...
The world would be a better place.
Oh, I see. But how would there be books? Too much competition for books.
I mean, look at that statistic, 300,000 books published in the United States last year.
Yeah, I know.
In addition to the self-published books,
yeah,
of which there were 700,000.
That's a million.
You know, I read a book a week, and... I'm going to read 52 books out of the 300,000.
Well, then you better choose carefully.
And the thing is, it's you cannot possibly read everything that's worth reading, nor can you get published everything that ought to be published.
Yeah, you know, I've run into that recently. I keep seeing books I've got to read, and so I buy them, and I think, well, come on now, read them. So I have consciously been sitting down every night and reading and finishing some very interesting books. Do you have interesting books to talk about
today? I have a couple of really interesting books that are different from the ones I usually recommend. Somebody who reads for the blind brought in a book and said, you might like this. And it's an autobiography by a guy named Jay Hammond, about whom I knew nothing, but he was spent two terms as the governor of Alaska during the Prudhoe Bay incident. And it's called Tales of a Bush Rat Governor. Jay Hammond was a bush pilot for many years, so he knew the wilderness and the wilds, and just on a whim, he ran for governor and won. At a time when Alaska is desperately trying to decide between conservation and development. Development is going to bring in money, right? Oil. Conservation is going to preserve the wilderness. And most people in Alaska want to do both. And you can't do both.
No, you can't.
And how you adjudicate between these two, you know, it's a fine line. And so it turned out to be a really interesting book. A really interesting book.
What side did he come down on, I wonder?
The middle.
Yeah, he had to
You know, you do need development, right? But development needs a little, it can't just go anywhere it wants to, right? You've got to preserve some of the scenery in the wilderness.
You know, looking at the way the world's population is accelerating, it's changing as rapidly as, well, the population is rising as global temperature rises. And we're headed for a crash somewhere along the way. No two ways about it. But I don't think anyone is particularly preparing for that. We get so busy with what we have to do every day that planning for the future gets to be a real problem.
It really does. And I don't know if you can prepare that fast.
Well, we certainly lost...
You know, people tend to prepare under pressure.
Yeah. We lost our chance on global warming because, boy, it's running away now. Who knows whether we can slow it down even. So what's the name of that book?
Tales of a Bush Rat Governor.
Okay.
And it's a nice, salty, interesting book. The guy, it sounds like a very interesting, with a good mindset. But I got some light reading.
Oh, good.
That Lois Nichols put on to me, and it's by a Norwegian writer, J.S. Drangsholt. H-O-L-T, called The Marvelous Misadventures of Ingrid Winter. And I had no idea what to expect, but I went over to Barnes & Noble's and bought the book. And it turns out Ingrid Winter is a member of the humanities faculty in a Norwegian university, and the opening scene is a faculty meeting. I've been there. I haven't been to Norway, but... Apparently, there is no difference between what happens at faculty meetings between the faculty types at a Norwegian university and what happened at Augustana College or St. Olaf or the other schools I'm familiar with. The faculty has been asked to send a delegation to Russia to cement further relations and get more students from Russia into the Norwegian university. And nobody really wants to go, but... If they don't, they're going to get assigned the worst courses next year, and nobody wants to get assigned the worst courses. The dialogue, the characters, I've been there, right? I mean, it's just unreal. Well, they do. Ingrid Winter is one of those who ends up going to Russia, and it turns out there's a lot of hijinks. There's a missing icon in the place where the Norwegian delegation has been staying, and some of them end up in jail, and they end up accused of... So there are plenty of misadventures in this book. Uh-huh. It all turns out okay in the end, and the Norwegian delegation returns to Norway without even being able to understand what the Russians were all about.
Join the club.
Join the club. And It is. It's, if you're tired of current politics and tired of really heavy literature and want to read something fun, read The Marvelous Misadventures of Ingrid Winter.
Marvelous Misadventures of Ingrid Winter. Michael Lewis has written some startling books, Flash Boys, The Big Short, Moneyball, The Blind Side. Most of his books have been made into movies. Big Short and Moneyball were extraordinary.
Right.
And in those stories, he talks about people who are analytical, who think analytically. And in Moneyball, instead of relying on the impulses of scouts, the manager starts looking at the figures that this man has brought in that shows what players actually do. And he builds a football team of odds and ends that makes it to the finals. But this book is interesting. It's called The Undoing, A Friendship That Changed Our Lives. This is the story of the work of two Israeli psychologists, Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky. And they set in motion ideas about how we think that have been picked up by everything, every organization from the NSA to major corporations to political campaigns and so on. Because there are two ways of thinking. One is the familiar way, and you should read the book to understand this, but associations and so on and assumptions. And the second is the critical, the analytical. And psychologists will tell you that the brain doesn't work very hard on the first kind of thinking, but it expends a lot of extra energy on the critical thinking. And as a result, you can get people to do things and believe things by appealing to that kind of easy side of thinking. But what you desperately need, I think, is that second kind of thinking,
right,
the critical kind. But this is the story of how they work together, how they came up with these ideas, how they were applied, how their friendship kind of came apart as one received more credit than the other. But then the one who received credit died early, and the second one got the fake Nobel Prize. The fake Nobel Prize is the one for economics. The Nobel family says that economics is not a science, and we're not giving a prize for it. So a bank... A Norwegian bank puts out this Nobel.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, this Nobel Memorial Prize for studies that promote the kind of thinking the bank likes. And that's why the Chicago School of Economics has won so many Nobel
right.
Prizes, because they're the fake kind. But it's a great book. It's called The Undoing Project, A Friendship That Changed Our Minds by Michael Lewis. It's a very thoughtful book, but it's well worth your attention and time. So I would recommend that as a kind of a star for this week if you want to get into something that's big and important and has the means of kind of changing the way we think. The Undoing Project is worth your time. And that's all our time. Thank you for tuning in, Roald. We'll see you and our listeners next week.
All right.
On the next session of Scribble.